I shared out of Hebrews. I've got a couple directions to go today, and I'm going to hone in on one thing, and just kind of, and I'm going to go here. I was relating out of Hebrews 3 this address. I shared it here a little bit. I carried on some out in Marion when I shared. I'm going to come back and revisit this because there's really, really some stuff I want to just, it just keeps growing in me. So I'm going to stay on this. And there's this address to the holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling. That's how they're addressed. And if you can imagine this address, we love to watch big events, Super Bowl, halftime, you know, shows and different things that go on in big venues. And just imagine a large stadium and the announcer comes on and he addresses us. And there's not just this little group, but there's just countless thousands all around. You know, it's like this huge place. And he comes over the microphone with that booming voice, you know, that you hear at a stadium. And we're announced as the holy brethren, we're addressed, holy brethren, you're in this group, you've come to the event, you're sitting here. There's just that sense in that, in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 1, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling. Oh yeah, baby, like you not only heard the call and the call comes from heaven, but you engaged in it, you partook of it. I want all of you to consider, you know, when the drums are going and, you know, the thing's building and he announces the apostle and the high priest of our calling, Jesus Christ. Like this, he is the main event. He is the one. We have gathered, you partook, you've engaged, and boom, here he is, you know. It's like, you know, Monday Night Football. Do they even do Monday Night Football anymore? Do they kind of cancel that out and do something? I don't know. Whatever. See how much I follow that? But I think it's a... Go ahead, have your laugh. Whatever you're laughing about. Make sure I'm situated right, that you're not laughing at me. And but he's the focal point. And then the writer of Hebrews goes on to build a case about this. He wants this, the Hebrew people, the Hebrew church, their believers there, he wants them to get this. Like, you know Moses. Moses, like, you talk Moses, like, don't put any smack down on Moses. Moses was the man. He was the guy. You don't talk bad about Moses. Everything was about Moses. And he was the one that brought them the message. So Moses was a servant in the house, and that's a whole another teaching in itself, isn't it? I think I shared some of that. That's where we get this house of therapy, the therapist, how that word breaks down. James Maloney studied that word. It says, Moses was a servant in the house of his house, but he was a servant in it. He wasn't the builder. Now I want you to consider, all of you that have had Moses in this place, and that's fine, but we have someone greater than him that has come in, so you need to replace Moses in a sense as far as the priority and the person, the apostle, the high priest of who you are and what you are with Jesus Christ, because he's not just another servant, though he was the servant in Isaiah. Yes. Though he was a servant and he washed his disciples' feet, he was an amazing servant. In every, he fulfilled that and so many other things. But who is greater, the house or the builder of the house? He makes this point with him. Who's greater, the house or the builder of the house? And he said, I say the builder of the house is greater. This is just a house, but who's the great? God, Moses served God. He was a servant to the builder of the house. Jesus Christ comes, and he's not just the servant. He's the builder of the house, and he's also the high priest of our calling. He's it. The builder's come to reside in you. So let's give great. Let's stop making this about the house. I think I end up sharing about shame that Sunday morning. This was a real confidence builder for me. I mean, I really needed this shot in the arm, and I got it. I spoke on this Sunday morning, whatever the date was, 2 weeks back. That night, this conference schedule was odd up in Cleveland. Couldn't have to do with when they could get facilities to do this in. And the conference, here's these flies. Lacey, get out the zapper. We call them, they're dumb flies. They're swarming flies. We've identified them. They're not normal flies. They're not smart. They're dumb. I think if you had your mouth open, they'd fly in. So be careful. They're like that. They get up on us on the worship team. We're like, pestilence, curse, you know. And not today. That's for next time. Thank you, Samuel. He's reminding me of something I asked him to pull up, but yeah. Thank you. And so I spoke, and I end up ministering about shame that morning. Remember that? I called people up, and that was the ministry. That was the object of that, was getting to shame. And the real deliverance from shame is getting our eyes off of the house and getting it on to the one that fills the house. So we go on to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, and we start seeing this. We have a treasure in earthen vessels. So even if you are a half-baked pot, what matters is what's in the pot, not the pot. Only in our culture do we make a big deal about jewelry boxes. You know what a jewelry box is? What was the purpose of the box? To hold the jewelry. Leave it to us to give great value to some old jewelry box, totally empty. It has nothing in it, but look at the box. It's kind of what we do. We have the tendency in the Christian church and our Christian culture to make a big deal about the box. We love admiring the box. Could we move on from the box? I mean, I'm all about having nice boxes and nice stuff. That's good. That's good. Let's get our emphasis back on the treasure that's within. What the box was made to carry. And that will give you warm, fuzzy feelings. You can just get off yourself. That's a great relief. That's a good news. You can thank me later. You can just stop focusing on that and focus on the one that's in you and what's in you, the treasure within. So when we have that treasure within, then that needs to be the focus. And the writer of Hebrews was addressed, get your eyes off the house. Stop serving the house. And the house can be a physical building. The house can be your body. The house can be your organization. The house becomes, we always go there. Like, smack your hand and say, stop it. Stop putting all this emphasis on the house, on the structure, on what was built, and get your eyes back on the one that builds. That'll keep you tuned up. That's a good adjustment for you. That's like taking, you know, that's eating healthy food. That's like taking vitamins. It's what's good for you. It sets you back to your default. The more we focus on ourselves, the worse things get. Regret, condemnation, all those things are born out of what? Meditating on yourself and your behavior and your actions and what you've done right and done wrong. A little of that goes a long way. Get your eyes on the one that's in you. Get free from this stuff. And if you've done something wrong, go, oops, sorry. And can we just leave it that simple? It's that, you know, if you're doing something that you know is not wrong, right? Stop it. Just quit. It's not your identity. It's just stupid stuff. And if you need more help, then get more help. But let's not make it about that. Let's make it about who's in us. I determined a while back, you know, you have things. You're like, you start that victim approach to what you need, and you're going to make an appeal. I don't know who you're going to make an appeal to for what you don't have or what you think you should have, blah, blah, blah. And it'll catch any of us at any given time. And I just want to encourage you. I made a decision a while back. I've had to make it several times in my life. That's okay. That I'm going to be a testimony. I refuse to even talk like this. I'm not going to build a case about why I need something. I'm sick of that approach. I learned that it comes out of that poverty mentality and spirit that is all around us here, you know? Breathe the air, it's here. But we don't have to partake in that. We're partakers of the heavenly calling. See how that works? Like, no. I partake of that. I engage in that. That has come. Jesus came. He comes to us. He invites me in. And you partake. You go, I'm in. I don't know what partaking actually looks like. It's when you move into cooperation with him, you kind of get in the car. The car door opens, and you go, I'm in. And I made a determination, I'm going to be a testimony for the Lord. So whatever I need is just there. It's just the material for being a testimony to the Lord's provision and how he works and what he does. So I had to control my attitude and feelings. I really had to put some effort into saying no to a lot of temptations in my heart and how I'd present myself this past weekend. I had to really guard over that. I'm like, here, I'm going to come in low. I'm going to talk low about myself, then there'll be low expectation. That's cheating. Do you know that? Now, don't be going talking greater about yourself than you are. That's not good either. That's arrogance. But this thing of where I build a case like I'm going to keep the expectations low on me. I had to like dispense with all that. It was a challenge, and I made it. I did it. I went, I walked confidently, I act confidently, and guess who showed up? Jesus. He helped me. It was awesome. It was amazing. Like, you don't know. That was a huge, huge victory. That was really, really awesome. And the Lord was with me because I just went in that, I went in that thing. Are you catching flies, Jonathan? I won't be impressed till you use chopsticks to catch that up. Then we'll be impressed. We have to entertain ourselves around here. Used to be, where were we? We've been in a lot of buildings over the years. It wasn't flies before. Remember the wasps? Where did we have wasps bad? Like in the middle of a meeting, someone's, you know, that's a little more unnerving than a fly. So, yeah, anyways, always something to overcome. Determine that to, now here's what I want to get into, revisit, and I want to take it a little further. I saw a movie scene as I was preparing to go to Marion, a scene out of a movie, an action comedy, so this will be fun, came to my mind. It's not very spiritual, yet it is. It's really great. It's a great scene when you break it down and apply it to this. And it's the scene out of the movie Night and Day, K-N-I-G-H-T, and Day with Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz. And in the middle of the movie is this scene where he is addressing Cameron Diaz, and he says these words. He realizes she's freaked out about staying with him because he's not safe. He doesn't look safe. He's a good guy, but there's no way to tell that by his behavior. Because like his just earlier, threw handcuffs on her and said, "You are coming with me." That doesn't give you warm fuzzy feelings. Like, this isn't your rescuer. It's like the police come, I'm going to help you, and the first thing they do is throw handcuffs on you and take you hostage. Like, this is how the bad guys act. This isn't how the hero acts in my life. And he says to her, June, with me, without me. Your life with me is up here. Your life without me, you're probably not going to survive the day. Now, she can't comprehend that because she doesn't really know what's going on. But he does. Because he's undercover and he's done this great, great thing that nobody likes and his life is in danger. And hers definitely is. And here's why. He bumped into her in the airport because he was smuggling something, only it wasn't bad. It was good. He was bringing something through. Because there were people after him to steal that thing. It was a small item. And he purposely bumps into her in the airport, slips it in her baggage, lets her walk through security, and then, you know, bumps into her again and gets it back out. But he encountered her, and she encountered him. And once that happened, her life was in danger. Now, he tried to keep her out of danger, but the powers that be made sure she wasn't out of danger, that she stayed, got in danger. You also have an enemy, and once Jesus bumps into your life and encounters you, you have this choice to make about whether you're going to partake. And honestly, you're targeted from the moment you're born. Why? Because you look like him. You're made in his image. And no matter what you do, you're not safe. And so Jesus comes along and says these words, if you try to save your life, you're going to lose it. But if you lose your life for my name's sake, you're going to save it. And I believe that not only at the onset of Jesus asking you to come and receive him and become a born-again Christian, born-again person, that many times on your journey, he comes and encounters you. And he invites you into the next adventure. And he always gives you a choice. Tom Cruise gives, you know, Cameron Diaz a choice at a certain point. And he actually sets her free. She's like, you're freaking me out. You're killing people. You're this, you're that, da, 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 da. And rightly so. We're freaked out too by the adventure. The possibilities of not living through the moment. He's like, if you stay with me, I can protect you. And I know you don't know any better. But if you leave me, you're not protected. And you're going to be targeted. They're going to take your life. And he releases her. And he walks away, and she's left. The scene is she's left standing there, and all of a sudden she realizes, though it's beyond her comprehension, and most of your adventure with Jesus will be a little bit beyond your grasp. Anybody testify? A little bit beyond what you can comprehend it's going to turn out like. Like maybe it even is scaring you to death. You may lose your reputation in this scenario. Now, there's the precious. How I look in front of people. I'm going to look bad. I'm going to look stupid. I mean, just the stupid thing can get most of us stop doing anything. Just the fear of looking stupid. Man, I hate it when I feel stupid. I did something recently. Oh, it was my truck, you know. Take my truck. I'm driving my truck, my good old, you know, Chevy pickup. And took something to somebody's house and got back in the truck and it wouldn't start. It would start, but it wouldn't run, you know. Just couldn't get it going. Like, come on. Tried. Nothing. Now, later I'm thinking, you stupid, you know, did you not look at the gas gauge?
No
like,
way.
I had to have looked at the gas gauge. I've got yellow lights that come on. I call the tow truck.
You did not.
They come and pick up my truck, and I'm trying to decide where to take it. You know, Huebner's is too full. I call Huebner's. Now they're all jammed up. They can't look at it for weeks. And so I'm standing there. I'm like, I don't like this, and my truck's old, and I don't want to put one more $5 bill in this truck. You know, you're at that. You don't ever want to be there with your vehicles. Like, you just don't want to. That's that corner you never want to be in. And you tell everybody else, don't put yourself in that position with your vehicles. I was there. I'm there. You know, I'm right there, right up against it. The transmission was already down to two gears left out of the four. And, you know, I've already been nursing along. And, you know, yeah, staying focused on things that were important, like weddings and things like that this year. So I'm just all proud of myself. Usually I'm like, I got to fix everything. So I just riding the wave and a little more, a few more miles, and boom, there I am. I'm like, the fuel pump's got to be out of it. It's got to be what it is. You know, right? Logically, whatever. Drop it off, and we tow it and haul it over to the local whatever. And I'm thinking first, you know, and I'm thinking when I get there, I do need to check the gauge. I'm thinking that as I'm riding in the tow truck. Like, I do need to check the fuel gauge and check something. I should check that. Like, just to make sure. Get down, pop, I don't know, whatever. Because I've not had any trouble with it. You know. So the mechanic was able to get to it earlier. He was probably going to sit there a week, but he said, I had something else to do. I just pulled in the garage. He goes, yeah, it's showing low fuel pressure. He said, is your gas gauge working? I said, yeah, as far as I know. And I said, I wondered that, but I would be seeing a big yellow light if it was out of gas, right? Yeah. So long story short, I do have gas. I do have a can of gas. I can throw a couple gallons in it just see, you know. Like, well, yeah, before we spend $600 on a fuel pump, like, yeah. And I did that once. I am not doing that again on my truck. So I'm like, I said, yeah, try it. He goes, okay, I'll call you in a half an hour. So a half an hour later, he's called. He goes, hey, your truck's running fine. I couldn't even, Phyllis like, oh, yes, that's great. You know, we don't have to spend this money. I'm not feeling the excitement. I'm just not feeling it because I'm like that stupid thing's on me. I hate feeling stupid about something. And I'm like, keep this on the down low. I hope nobody finds out that I don't know. With me? Without me? I'm like, well, since we're in stupid and I've been driving this truck broken for a year, you know, I talked to Marty. Like, Marty, you think you guys have an opening? Because I couldn't get it anyplace else, and it was going to cost more money than I want to spend just to have somebody look at it. You got anybody over there to find out? Just take a look under the hood. See, why isn't this transmission working right? Because I said, it works. It's not slipping, but something's, you know, something's definitely not home there, you know. And so I'm like, who knows? Lift the hood, you know, the tech's looking and what he said. Definitely a problem between here and there. It's like, yeah, I suppose, you know. Maybe I'll just run a wire. Do you mind if I just, you know, put a whole new wire and just put it from here to there? And you know, it's like, yeah, it works. And then the tech comes over later to me and goes, I found the reason. You want to come and look at this? I'm like, oh boy, this should be fun, you know. And I walk over, and he finally lifted something and lifted something else. And here, this has happened to me before. Chipmunk had gotten into the wiring harness. And I mean, it was a holiday on ice. I'm like, oh boy, this is, you know, this is an insurance claim, looking in there. And so that ended up being very small. I've driven this truck thunk, 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 thunk with two gears for all summer. And, you know, it's supposed to be it's an automatic that has two clunky gears left. And so, yep, that's simple. Amazing. So they taped up the wires. This tech said, yeah, I can fix this. I'm thinking, wow, what's trash, you know, total the truck right now because I'm looking at this mess. And then I get home and I'm texting Ashley. It was just a chipmunk. And we have one thing to say about that. The cat is not doing her job. This is Uber tracker cat that kills everything that even moves. And what's up with her? And then I'm talking to Ashley and I went, oh yeah. I said, I know why this is. Because when Ashley sees the cat catch a chipmunk, she goes into hyper mode. Oh, save the chipmunk, Makita, stop killing it. And she has rescued several chipmunks from the cat. And I said, you're getting the bill for this. How is it, and what is your thing, where you're facing this, I'm going to save my life, or I'm going to lose my life. I'm going to say, you know, how do you save your life? Jesus invites you into an adventure, and it's like, but the only way you're going to be able to walk with me is you're going to give up your life. You're going to have to die to that self-preservation thing. You're going to have to let that go. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I want to revisit this. I think it's so important. We've got to resolve this. Maybe we'll have to visit it 1,000 times in our life. It doesn't matter. And I shared this last time. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. In verse 7, he says, we have this treasure in earthen vessels that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us. That's what this needs to look like. We don't like that verse. We'd like to take it out of the Bible. I want the excellency to look like me. Like when I'm done, I want to go like, yeah, see, I'm good. It says it needs to be about the power of God. And then he goes into this section. I'm going to reread this. We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus. Take that verse out of the Bible. Get it out of there. And so we're developing this culture where we're talking more about good things and God is good and getting out of that mentality we have. That's all good. But there's one thing, folks, we are not going to be able to escape. You must have the dying of Jesus going on in your life if you want to survive this, if you want to live. Because everything that Jesus requests of you, well, every once in a while we have something he asks us to do, and we're like, oh yeah, I'm good at that. I can do that. Most of the time, it's stuff, and you'll be like, he asks us to forgive, for example. That's always a real nice thing to bring up. Great subject. And in your secret life, when no one's around, maybe the kitchen table with your wife only or husband only, you will confess how you really feel. No way am I going to forgive that. It'd kill me if I had to forgive or release that. And Jesus would say, exactly, it will. If you try to save yourself in this, it will kill you. And many of the things that it requires of us, it requires that dying to yourself. Now, this isn't about being a depressed person. At the moment that you release this, let's say you're angry and it's the vengeance thing. I am going to go kill somebody, something. And you think, not me. Let the right situation come along and you'll be reaching for your guns and knives as well. I can't stand it. I can't stand watching this injustice. I shared that. You have injustice coming. I share it a lot. It's huge. If you've been impacted, you witnessed an injustice, you need prayer. Because we were not wired to handle injustice well. It'll make you angry. I've always heard stories about this. You can just read a story or book. Be careful what television you watch. You watch an injustice, it will affect you more than what you. It's how we're wired. It affects us badly. We need to watch over that. As far as you can't help what you see sometimes, but you do need prayer. You need the Lord to come and help you with that. Don't try to carry that on yourself. So there are many things, and the only way you can live through this, you realize your flesh is rising up, so you can be right in the middle of the ministry. You still have to watch this. You can be right in the midst of doing a great thing. Matter of fact, when you're in a place of serving and doing something that's really an awesome thing, you're probably in the most danger of this thing stinging you. Most of the time, they come. You've just given money, you've just helped somebody, you've just really invested in doing something good. And that's exactly where this other thing comes along, and it'll challenge that, and it'll make that good thing that you did bitter. And when that's all done, you need to let it go. You need to forgive. This is when we start making vows to ourselves. I'm never doing that again. Back to this man, Gunther, that I've met that's coming next week. He pours his life out for these young adults, for these young people that he meets. He pours it out, him and his wife. They lay it out there. And oftentimes, they move away, they go away, it hurts when you've done all this, but we can never control what people. 3 months later, something happens, they leave, they're transient, things happen, and it causes you to start going, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not giving like that anymore. I'm not sowing. And you start holding back, and what are you doing? You're saving your life. You went, man, I did that before. That hurt. I'm not doing that again. Careful. You started out good. It turned into a hardship, hard-pressed. It turned into a crushed. It turned into a despair. It turned into a persecuted. It turned into one of these things. But Paul and the apostles, these guys, they went in a way where they went, yep, but we're not defeated. I'm still standing up. I'm still coming back. I live that adventure. This movie, like, all of a sudden, it's a great example. I don't even know that you should watch it. It's not that bad of a movie, but it's like, it's still just a movie. But in this, it's how the writer worked this out. I went, it's really an impressive character that whoever wrote that came up with. In it, Tom Cruise, he's just never distressed, though he's in all these situations. He just stays on task. you and I, we'd be so rejected. Everybody I cared about has turned against me. The organization that I belong to is trying to kill me. And, you know, we're all holed up in our room. Life's not going good. I've been betrayed, rejected. Yeah, just a couple of those things. And we're shot. We're done. We're cooked. They didn't like what I did. They put something on Facebook about me that wasn't true. We're all in a huff, and we need to go, like, not in this a bad attitude, but in a very good attitude to just stay on task and go, I'm just going to keep doing the good thing. Like, oh, that, you can even, it can even hurt. It's not about not being, be angry, but don't sin. You're a real person. Sometimes I'm ministering to my friends. They're like trying to say all the right things. You can tell that right away. Like, listen, what you just went through hurt. You're allowed to say it hurt. You're just not allowed to act bad. It was what it was. Ouch. Hold your heart. Ask Jesus to heal that. Like, ooh, that cut deep. It's cool when you just start going, ouch, ooch, like that was what it was. And just be there in the moment. The Lord will come and rescue you out of it. But if you try to save your life, you try to build your defenses, you try to have vengeance, you try to retaliate, you're dead, you're cooked. This isn't good. You'll be trying, you're thinking you're saving your life. You think you're having vengeance, and it's not good. The next subject, when I'm going to just take some time developing this, I kind of broke into something. I was tempted to start into it today, but I'm like, no, I'm gonna wait and let this just germinate in my soul, my spirit. But it has to do with this word justice, and has to do with the concept of justice, and it has to do with coming to the place where we must trust the one that brings real justice, and we associate that word, has a negative connotation for us often, but do you know it's good for you to pray for justice to come into situations, because the real justice and righteousness actually are very interchangeable words, and many of the times when they're translated in the Bible, they come out of the same basic word. And we need to get a real Bible concept of what that is. And sometimes when justice comes, it can bring what we would consider a judgment. But the heart of it is to make things right, to set things right. The real meaning of righteousness is to make things right. And here's what's amazing about the word. The two main things, the primary one is that it's about relationship. It's about relating to you and God, or you and people. And justice coming is what comes and sets that right. And so you can pray for justice in situations. And just like the doctors, the medical professions have their limitations, and we get upset with them. We go to the doctor and we go, they're not helping me. They're not fixing me. It's like, okay, so they're tapped out. What? So what? Is that really where? Is that your last resort? We got a bad case of this in our culture. Somebody told us that the doctor knows everything and can fix everything. Who said that? Where'd that come from? And if it was said, who's dumb enough to believe that? Really? Honestly? And this is where Bill Johnson would say, just slap yourself. Like, you know, why would we go there? They're not God. And do the same thing at the church? The pastor let me down? Yeah, probably. We really know him. He's got some real limitations, personality defects, whatever, you know. Hang around with him 30 years. You just had the short list. Now, wait, you know. But in all seriousness, I've been encouraging some people in my life. Let's begin. Let's transfer our eyes off of the justice of man and our court systems and the legal system, and get our eyes on the one that brings real justice. We haven't tapped into that yet, not at a level. And this isn't about wishing judgment on people. This is about looking at injustices. And if the Lord brings, he can do a sweep, bring justice into a situation, and it's righteous, it's clean. It brings answers that I never thought of that. How about a solution to an unjust situation you're looking at that is just the Lord's intervention, like we're tapped out. No one else can fix this. So Lord, bring justice here. It's a redemptive thing right out of the vaults of wisdom that speaks an answer that no one thought of. Wisdom speaks and brings the deliverance and set things right, and it's clean. That's my favorite thing. You know, you understand most of the things we come up with are not clean. They're very contaminated, and they're going to cause bigger messes than what we're trying to fix. Everything you come up with makes a bigger mess than what you're fixing. Now here, I'll do this. Not good. The reciprocal effect of what your great idea is going to cause more trouble. But if we can come to this place where we rely, and this is about this thing where we'll lay down our lives and we'll be the happiest. When you finally get back to being peaceful and following Jesus and loving where he says to love, forgive where he says to forgive, trust him in the things that he says to trust him in, you'll get peaceful. That anxiety and that edge, it will leave you. Now, honestly, do any of you really enjoy living like that? I know, I'm not asking for confessions of how many of you do. I'm just asking, do you really feel good when you're in that? Got a rough situation? I mean, I can just go through and list off the things in each one of you, your families, that are injustices that are going on, that I want to see some answers as much as you do. So let's transfer to a place where really, and there's, like I said, I'll develop this later. I have a feeling I'll be on it. And the scriptures just explode with this, the Psalms and everything. And you realize the Lord's heart to bring justice that is usually redemptive. Yeah, sometimes there's an effect. If we have an employer, we have someone that we're under or someone that's over an organization, whatever his title may be. Jeremiah 9, I'll take a moment here to just, because this is so important. Here are the things the Lord loves. He loves compassion, he loves righteousness, and he loves justice. And if you understand that about him, like you're really ahead of the class. That's the truth. And that's what Jeremiah 9:24 says. You understand this about me, you're ahead of the class. You probably won't even have to take some of the courses in this that you can just skip. You understand this about God. He loves compassion and he loves right things, setting things right and, you know, putting it right. And he loves justice. And you can pray for that because justice sets things right. If someone's over an organization and there's someone that's embezzling in the company or someone that's doing, if you belong to that organization, you want whoever has authority to come and set that right, don't you? It brings peace. It brings peace to the organization. It's not even about judging or punishing somebody that may be involved. But you can pray for justice to come and not have this feeling like you're trying to judge something or you want to see somebody suffer. Now, if you got that in your DNA, yeah, you need to repent from it. Like the Lord sees that ugliness in your heart. And sometimes that's what our deal is. We're bad. We see something, we're like, I want them to like suffer for what they've done. Well, go, that's not a good thing. Go somewhere and pray. Wow. Like, don't function in that. But at the same time, we do observe things, and you can pray for justice to come. You can pray for the things to be made right, the Lord to come, because he's the Lord of justice, and it brings peace again. It puts relationships back. Like, that's our cry. There's breakdown in relational things. There's breakdown in things being right. And we, the Lord, he loves. This isn't about what this, you know, we talk about the judgment seat of Christ. I was reading again about that, and I think Eric Johnson referred to it as well. And it shouldn't be something where we're terrified about it. It's coming, and for the most part, here's what it should be for us. Like, oh, happy day. The Lord's finally going to say, oh, yeah, those decisions you make, I was with that. Yeah, I was with that. Even though nobody else thought you were in a good place, I got it. I was leading you. That vindication thing, don't you love to be vindicated? You can go sometimes for years looking bad at something, and then vindication comes. You're like, ooh, that's nice. I love being vindicated for things. Let the judgment seat of Christ be this thing where he vindicates you. And yeah, if you're not being up front with the Lord and you're running some cons and some scans in the kingdom and a couple other things, then yeah, you're probably, I wouldn't want to show up there with that stuff unresolved, honestly. But it needs to be, again, when we get this grasp of his heart in this, then we don't have no more fear. We live in confidence and we turn things over to, I want to encourage all of you, come to a new level of trusting the Lord to bring justice in situations. Can you do that? And get your eyes off of everything else that you have it on. You can practice this right now. We've got a presidential campaign coming up. It's going to twist you all up. I don't know a thing about it, but I just know it always does. Yeah? What if you can look at all that, listen to all the rhetoric about it, and go, yeah, but we've installed our king. And you can watch the huff and the puff and the fireworks and the light shows and all that go on and go, I know who sits in a throne that's higher than all of this. That's where I tap into that. And yeah, some it's disturbing and it's this and it's that. And we really got to be careful what we believe anyways. Half of what we hear is. And just calm yourself down and get your eyes on the one you can trust that really has control. Because the whole thing can fall apart. It doesn't change what my responsibilities are in the kingdom. It doesn't change. Jesus doesn't change. Life may change for us. It is changing. Changing all the time. If you're flexible and you're flowing with him, then it doesn't scare you. We don't have to be in this bad place with it. We can just trust. So. Is Samuel still in the house or is he? Let's pray. Father, in Jesus' name, I just ask for a real revelation as we've encountered you. You are the God of justice and righteousness, and we don't have to be afraid of those terms. And we can look at the hardships of our life. And as long as we have this dying of Jesus in us, this ability to lay down our flesh life and our self life, we can continue even in hardships to stay in a peaceful place. We get to keep our eyes on the builder of the house, then the different conditions and situations that happen in the house don't affect us as much. Our personal successes or failures aren't a matter of life and death. Because our eyes are on the one that builds and the one that creates and the one that engineers and the one that designs. If the Lord builds the house, because if he doesn't build the house, we are working hard in vain. So Lord, we establish today that you are the builder of the house. And I ask for release, a revelation. Give us the prayer to pray. Give us the prayer to pray for justice, to pray for this to come. so that we can just trust that you will come into these situations, and we're not wishing bad on anybody, that we're wanting to see a divine answer that brings life. And in areas we're trying to save our lives, just lay that down. I don't want to be saving my life. I want to lose my life for you. I trust you to take me on this adventure. If I try to save myself in it, I'll lose. If I stay with you, I'll live. And I'll live well. Deliver us from the cares that encumber us. Deliver us from the fear of losing our reputation. Deliver us from the fear of feeling stupid. Deliver us from the fear of losing things we're hanging on to. What you give us gifts, and there's no regret in it. There's no sadness in it when you give us the things that you give us. We don't have to hang on to. And if we lose it, and it's important for us to have it, you just replace it. It's simple. Let me read this last verse out of Psalms 32 in the Passion Translation. I hear the Lord saying, I will stay close to you, instructing and guiding you along the pathway for your life. I will advise you along the way and lead you forth with my eyes as your guide. So don't make it difficult. Don't be stubborn when I take you where you've not been before. Don't make me have to tug you and pull you along. Just come with me. That invitation. Be a partaker. With me, without me. And don't make this hard. Don't make me have to drag you along. Come willingly. Because I'm going to win the battle, and I'm going to save your life all in the same time. Don't resist me. Follow me. Flow with me. Follow what I say. That makes the most simple life exciting. We start following what he says. Just posture yourself in a place where you open yourself up. Lord, what's your answer to this? What's the key? And just wait on him till he shows you. Because the keys are not the things we want to do and fix. The keys to the deliverance, they're the most simple thing. You'll know that it's from him if it's just something that's so simple, ridiculous, that you're like, oh, that can't be it. Follow him. Engage in him. In Jesus' name.